Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome once again into the studio, Police Chief Lance Ketterling. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you.
This is a this is a nice day. We've talking a moment or two before we started about the improved quality of the road system. Yesterday being much less pleasant to be out there, very slippery, et cetera, and today much better.
Yeah, it's that time of year again. We definitely have that freeze-thaw cycle going on that we do sometimes. Seems like we haven't got much of a winter for the last couple of years, but what we have gotten is quite a bit of freezing rain and some subsequent thawing and then some subsequent freezing. And so sometimes the roads have been fairly bad. Kudos to Public Works, certainly, for keeping up with that and doing a good job with sand. They come out very early, but some of the sidewalks around town are still extremely slippery. And again, as we were mentioning earlier, just nice patches of dry sidewalk punctuated by icy patches of death that are waiting to trip people up and make them fall. So caution, of course, is in order this time of year. And consider things like ice cleats or walking sticks or something like that to help you get around.
And yesterday, my wife, Lee, convinced me, and I found it was a good idea, to take one of our walking sticks. And it was very helpful. I realized that just having that was made a large difference when I approached some of those icy patches.
Yeah, they're wonderful little things.
Yeah, to make that happen. So for the police department, when we get that kind of glare ice that's pretty much all over the city, what do you do?
Well, what we do is try to make sure that the areas outside of our building are sanded and taken care of and ice melted and whatnot. So if we do have visitors or in those events where we have to bring prisoners into the department, they have a safe place to walk so they can get to where they need to get. Of course, just routine driving becomes something you have to focus even more on. So the officers will pay more attention when they're out in the roads. And we just do occasionally get some more slip and fall accidents around town. The dispatchers certainly hear about it with an increase in accidents in a huge area that they cover. So, yeah, definitely the medics and EMS will tend to run more on days like yesterday.
Okay. All right. Well, our topic today is going to be more than just the ice. We had talked earlier about an aspect of training that officers here in the Palmer Force have been receiving. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what we're talking about is and not necessarily a new awareness, but certainly a new focus on mental health and the response to people in mental health crisis that the police department does in order to do that better. It's pretty interesting, but the statistics that were being thrown around in the class that all the officers went to, and they did all attend, is that about one in four people, certainly one in five, is going to be suffering at one time or another from some type of diagnosed or clinical mental health disorder. And those can range, of course, from very, very mild things. A lot of people experience depression or anxiety, to much more serious stuff, bipolar disorders, schizophrenic disorders, those types of things. And many times people with those serious disorders will be frequently involved with law enforcement in one time or another simply because they have difficulty adapting to the normal circumstances of life. So the training is called Mental Health First Aid, and each one of the officers in Palmer went to it, as well as Alaska State Troopers and medics and correction officers and Wasilla police officers. And it was a really global scope type of training, but it was an 8-hour class. And it basically is designed to help them de-escalate conflict and put these people in touch with some resources that can help them in order to deal with this. Because often as not, they may commit crimes. And certainly if they do, they might have to go through some type of court process for that. But what is the best process for that so they can avoid reoffending? Do they need to be, you know, incarcerated immediately, or are there better ways that we can address this issue so, one, they can get treatment they need, two, the justice system and any potential victims can certainly have access to the justice system involved because simply because you're in a mental health crisis is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. But what is the best thing to do for these folks and for the community at large in order to fix the problem so we can prevent it from reoccurring? The numbers of people that are incarcerated that are suffering from some type of diagnosed or undiagnosed mental health disorder is even higher than the population at large. So we do run across these folks on a pretty regular basis, and getting them in touch with services or somebody that can help them that has some training and skills is pretty paramount in order to prevent this from getting worse.
Okay, so how does that work? I had in the past myself been involved as a counselor and had a variety of ways in which, depending upon the circumstances, to contact different services. What does an officer do?
Well, services is a big challenge right now. And one of the issues is that right now the default setting for dealing with people in mental health crisis, if they've not committed a crime, but say they're maybe a threat to themselves or possibly even a threat to other people, but it hasn't reached that level of criminality yet, is the hospital or a Title 47 non-crim detention in Mattsu pretrial. And the former, taking them to Mattsu Regional, is a challenge sometimes because they have very limited space.
Right.
They're certainly willing to help and great. And the latter, taking them to Mattsu pretrial, is usually a short-term fix to a very long-term problem. And frankly, Mattsu pretrial has other things they need to be doing, and there are better places for these people to be. So the challenge is to put them in touch with services somehow. And one of the things that we came up with was a one-page front and back document. It's laminated. It's been handed out to all the major agencies in the Valley about what services are available for different types of issues, whether it's substance abuse or mental health or juveniles. And they can have this as a quick reference guide. And they certainly then can make copies of that and pass it out to the individuals themselves, because a lot of these folks don't know where to get services, or if they do, some of the challenges are keeping them there and actually attending and taking medication if they're supposed to be taking it and getting the help that they're supposed to be getting so that they can get better and not maybe be off their meds or not attending counseling and deteriorating in terms of their mental health.
So as you were talking, I'm thinking about specific kinds of situations that an officer might encounter, and the spectrum seems pretty broad, including factors such as being a danger to themselves or a danger to others or this is tough.
You know, it's extremely challenging, and then there's a variety of reasons that it's challenging, but these people come across law enforcement or EMS or just the community in a variety of different ways. And, you know, the type that the ubiquitous call for us is a concerned citizen saying that somebody is in a parking lot of X, Y, or Z acting
right.
strange.
Okay.
And so it's a suspicious person call. And, you know, the officers arrive and usually you can determine fairly quickly that there is, in fact, something going on there. Mm-hmm. It's not just a person that's acting strange for the sake of acting strange. There's a mental health issue. And they can range from relatively mild to extremely severe, complete disassociation with what's happening in the real world. For what it's worth, they consider drug abuse and certainly alcohol abuse to be a mental health disorder now.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we deal with particularly alcohol, but certainly other drugs as well. Are cars of considerable law enforcement contact because it has so many complicating effects on what would be normal behavior.
So I would say, I'm thinking, are there ordinances, laws about public drunkenness, for example?
There are. Generally, typically they're usually enforced more in licensed establishments. You know, a person's
sure.
had too much, they need to go home, that type of thing. Drunk in public, that type of stuff is a relatively rarely enforced ordinance. It's not a real strong one. It's a city ordinance, certainly. But, usually it involves behavior more than simply being intoxicated in public,
okay.
A variety of people may be what's considered intoxicated, but certainly act just completely fine.
Mm-hmm.
Very friendly people. Some people, on the other hand, act considerably different and can be very adverse to the community if they're intoxicated. So usually we address behavior rather than just simple chemical impairment. And that normally manifests in this form of a harassment charge, a disorderly conduct charge, or just a simple Title 47, or simply trying to give them a lift home or get in touch with a friend, or in this extremely severe cases, if we can find out who their service providers are, their doctors, their counselors, get them in touch with those people, which, as you can imagine, is a challenge at 2 a.m.
Sure.
Because those folks
right.
aren't picking up the phone.
Right.
Or maybe trying to find some place that they have not heard of yet. And look, these things are available to you. There's help out there, and you know, maybe we can assist you in getting in touch with it so you can start to feel a little better.
So the image I have here, listening as you've described this, is that the training has been designed to assist an officer or person contacting someone who has not done something to be charged necessarily, but it's getting a little bit ahead of the wave, noticing there is a potential for a problem to develop and to divert the person to a place where they can receive some assistance.
Yeah, I think that puts it very well. Prevention rather than enforcement is certainly one of our goals. We'd much rather just have a happy community where people are able to interact with each other and comply with the laws than having to make a ton of arrests. No matter what we think of our criminal justice system or the state of crime or the prisons or what have you across the state of Alaska right now, one thing is certainly clear, and that's we're not going to arrest our way out of the problem. It's just not going to happen that way. We need to try to find other avenues in order to keep the peace. And
so during the training, were there places pointed to either around the state or outside of the state that are further along in the process of developing better ways of obtaining services in these cases?
Well, there's different models across the country that use this type of mental health first aid. And one of our goals is to develop what's called a crisis intervention team, which is something that different organizations around the country certainly have. And it's a multidisciplinary team, but it can certainly take the form of a lot of first responders that are called to help specifically with mental health issues, similar to the way that you would call a drug recognition expert if you think you have somebody who's driving while under the influence of a drug other than alcohol. Those are difficult cases that a drug recognition will have to help with because a normal officer doesn't have that type of advanced training to detect and prosecute those cases. And it'd be something very, very similar to that model that we would be using for mental health first aid. A certain number of crisis intervention team trained officers that have received considerably more training in this and then can be called to respond to these individuals as they identify when they come up so they can have a better chance at getting a good resolution to this problem rather than just a simple arrest and, you know, booked in and then go through all the complications of a judicial system that really doesn't do anything through no fault of its own. But there are often other avenues that are better than jail for these individuals.
Okay. So it sounds like there's some work to be done. Are there at present any specific plans? I know we've had organizations, whether it's the Regional Hospital or Valley Health Foundation, that has long looked at comprehensive services provided. Are there any specific things that you see in the immediate future?
Well, there certainly are. And between myself and organizations from ranging from the Alaska State Troopers to the Matsu Health Association to Valley Hospital are all what's we're on this Crisis Intervention Team Steering Committee. And one of the major things that was done was funding in order for all the officers and people to take these trainings. And then there's going to be some more funding for people to go to an extended 40-hour class in order to more develop that. The end result that we would like to see happen, but this is kind of a 1,000-yard target for us, and it's going to take some political will as well, but I'll go ahead and plug it right now. What we're looking for, end result, is some type of 24-hour facility that's got multiple beds that law enforcement or first responders or even just private citizens will have that can be staffed 24/7 with clinical help for some of these individuals. It's a place they can go that is designed specifically for these types of things that is better suited for it than places like jail or a hospital that has other things that it needs to be doing as well.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, that's in one respect, I think that's a very encouraging, the recognition of the issue and a look at how to deal with it, particularly for those people who are on the front lines that are involved. I think everyone who managed to put this together should be commended. Interesting. And I will look forward to hearing more about it. So we have a few minutes for the opportunity to talk about any other aspect of the police department as we move forward from rapidly, it feels like, from winter to spring.
Sure.
I mean, do you have your spring uniforms or what?
No, it's the same thing pretty much year round. They just sometimes they act nice and we give them a coat, but sometimes not. Sure. No major changes there. The two interesting things that have come up recently, one involves a new city ordinance, and you may have been aware of that from the council meetings, but that prohibits the use of Jake brakes or what are called engine compression brakes in the city. And that was just recently passed. And for those of you that don't know, Jake brakes or engine compression brakes are that loud noise that commercial vehicles will make when decelerating. Usually it's when going down a hill. At any rate, those have now been prohibited inside the city limits. There'll be some signage going up relatively soon, we hope, that will make sure that drivers are aware of that. No heavy enforcement on that right now. Just want to make sure we're in that education period of traffic at the moment and want to make sure that people understand that there is a new ordinance and there can be tickets written. We'd, of course, rather not do that. But that was a new thing that will affect commercial vehicles. And the other thing is we swear in four new reserve officers this afternoon at 3 o'clock. So that's always a good thing. We'll have five total, which is a good place to start with the reserve program, actually, because it's enough to actually warrant the cost of training and all the other associated things that go with running a reserve program. So that's a big deal for them. For most of them, it's their first step into the law enforcement world. And so it's a very exciting time.
Now, we had a lengthy conversation and I'm interview passed about the reserve program. For those listeners who might have missed that, just a brief summary of what that is. What does that mean for these people?
Sure. Reserve officers are individuals that work in the and live in the community who want to come and volunteer their time in law enforcement. They do it for a variety of different reasons. Sometimes it's because they want to do this full time. Sometimes it's just because they want to help provide a safer community. So you may run across them in Palmer, and basically they're always going to be working, especially when they're new and, you know, for a period of years, they won't be out there by themselves. They're going to be associated with a regular sworn full-time officer that has experience, and they won't be taking any enforcement officer without them. But beyond that, it'll be hard to tell the difference between one of those, a reserve officer, and a brand new full-time. The only thing that'll be different is their badge says reserve on it rather than patrolman.
Okay.
They go through a rigorous training program, including firearms, use of force, constitutional law, search and seizure, pretty much everything that you would put a normal officer through in the academy. The difference is most of these folks are working members of the community, and they can't just afford to take off for 3 or 4 months and attend the police academy. So we give that to them in smaller bites. A lot of training goes on in the evening. The firearms and use of force classes will be particularly intense, and they'll be done in one block, but they're generally pretty highly trained, simply because they can exercise quite a bit of authority in conjunction with a regular officer. So they'll help out on things like parades. They'll come and just ride along on routine patrol, traffic enforcement, special events, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, since we were talking about officers into a reserve program, I remember reading recently that the city of Anchorage has, I think, reinstituted a program of lateral transfer into their officer corps.
Sure.
And that's kind of an interesting thing. Apparently, they had preferred for a while, or for whatever reason set, to train and bring someone up. And now, for a variety of reasons, they're looking to bring people in laterally. How has Palmer done it in the past? Has it been a mix where you've had experienced officers who come in, or what's our approach?
Typically, our approach has been a mix, we have certainly hired individuals that are brand new to law enforcement, have no experience whatsoever, and sometimes those work out extremely well, and then sometimes they don't work out so well. It's an interesting field to get into in that if there is no concept about what law enforcement is, other than what somebody might have conjured up in their head or seen on television, the reality of it can be difficult for some people. And so what we do see is typically a somewhat higher, we call them washout rates, either in the academy or in training, simply because this isn't what people really thought it was going to be. Wow. It's not as dramatic as it might have seemed on television. It's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of de-escalation. It's not just running around, kicking in doors, arresting the bad guys. I mean, certainly there is an element of that that goes on, but you know, you certainly try to limit it because what we're after is a peaceful, happy community. It can be a challenge to those individuals that have never done it before. On the other hand, we certainly have hired our share of officers that have come from other organizations. Hmm. Often they work out extremely well. And then sometimes, especially if they come from a larger metropolitan area, there can be challenges there as well, because there are differences in police culture, certainly between agencies. And in my opinion, culture is everything for a police department. If you have a good one, you have a respectful, appropriately using force, well-adjusted police department. And if you don't, it can be extremely problematic. And one individual can ruin the culture of an organization extremely quickly. So they have to fit here with what we do in Palmer. And there are some extremely fine officers that come from larger organizations that are just so used to doing things in such a different way, because their reality of police work in Chicago or Los Angeles or Detroit or some of these major areas, even to a degree Anchorage, are just somewhat different than we do here in Palmer. By default, we have been going using community-oriented policing for the last 20 years, probably longer, right. Simply because it's what you have to do in a small town in order to be effective. Whereas larger metropolitan areas, it's a little bit different. And to try to describe all the differences between some place like Chicago and Palmer would take more time than we've got now. But suffice it to say, they're myriad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So. All right. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Chief Ketterling. Any last comments before we finish up?
No, I don't think so. Just be careful.
Okay.
Enjoy your day.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in.